Hey everyone. Today's a very different episode. We're about halfway through the season, and I wanted to take a moment to get our heads out of the narrative and answer some of the questions you've asked me. I've also got some updates on the rest of the season, the plans for season two, and what's going to happen over Christmas. I hope you enjoy it. I'm Andy Earnshaw, and welcome to All Bones. You lot are a dark lot. That's the first thing to say. The two big questions I was asked were about cannibalism and racism. I'm not going to talk about racism today. Instead, I'll be posting a bonus episode to Patreon all about the misuse of terms like tribes as a Christmas present for my Patreons. Join up if you want to hear about it. It only costs a dollar. In the meantime, let's talk a little bit more about the cannibals of Goth's Cave. After the Cannibals of Goth's Cave episode, which was episode number 3, someone asked me how we know that the cuts of the bones of those who had been eaten were caused by guilt or shame by those doing the eating, and not just incompetence or desperation. I'll be honest, at first I got a bit nervous. I realised that I missed out a potential theory that humans were so used to butchering large mammals that it may have been that they overcompensated when butchering a human, which is much smaller than most of their prey. Then I really got thinking and revisiting my research. As a reminder, my theory was that cannibalism wasn't ritualistic or cultural. It was an extreme act in response to a very tough time. So, even if the cuts of the bones were due to incompetence and not guilt, that would also tell us that humans didn't eat people habitually, and that this was a very rare occurrence, which maps to the idea of this being survival cannibalism. But I still might have been wrong about the guilt part. I got thinking, and here's my conclusion. If they had been incompetent or treating these bones like they treated much larger animals, we'd have seen mistakes in the butchery, which aren't there. The cuts map very closely to butchery marks animals they usually ate, and the butchery is no worse than that which is done on the deer and horses found with the human bones. This suggests that they did know what they were doing. There is also, on some of the bones, artwork. It's not much, just a few parallel lines, but it suggests that the bones were held for a little while before they were thrown away. They weren't ravaging these people and then dumping them. Some people paused before throwing them away. Why would you pause after doing something so vile if it wasn't to reflect, maybe even regret, what you'd done? I'll admit that now and in that episode, I'm casting emotions onto these people that they may not have felt. The debate still rages as to what happened in Goth's Cave 15,000 years ago. However, I hope that clears up a little bit more why I argued that the deeper than expected cut marks were evidence of guilt. It's because, looking at other bones of other animals, it's clear they knew how much force to apply, but they chose to apply more than they needed. After they'd got the meat from the bones, they held them and sometimes scored them again before finally throwing them away. To me, at least, that seems like the actions of people who are shocked and horrified by what they had done. Let's have a slightly lighter question. I've had a few people, not least soon to be Mrs. Bones, ask me how we know the dates of pottery and why it survives in the record so well. Let's start with how we date the pottery. Not romantically, of course, but how do we find out how old pottery is? Dating in archaeology relies on a combination of two techniques, relative dating and absolute dating. Absolute dating is a catch-all term for technologies like radioactive carbon dating. There will be something specific about the object being dated that allows us to use science to get a specific number. The simplest example is dendrochronology, tree ring dating. You see, every year a tree grows, and that creates rings that correlate to each year's growth. Trees grow faster some years and slower in other years, depending on the climate, which creates a pattern in the rings. When it has been a good, warm year, the ring is fatter. In a poor year, the ring is narrower. So if we have a big bit of wood, we can look at the pattern of tree rings in that wood and compare that to charts stretching back thousands of years. If there is a large enough pattern of rings, we can say that this tree was cut down in a certain year. and thus assume it was used to create whatever we're dating within 12 months of being chopped down. That gives us a pretty exact date. Another famous example of absolute dating is radioactive carbon dating. Whilst things like animals and plants are alive, they are sucking in carbon constantly, and that gets stored in their bodies. When they die, that carbon begins to decay. You see, in our atmosphere, there are different isotopes of carbon. An isotope is an atom of the same element, say carbon, which has a different number of protons and/or neutrons in its core than what is listed on the periodic table. Some of those isotopes are more stable than others. A less stable isotope will, over time, try and lose one of those neutrons or protons so they can become more stable. That is called radioactive decay. It's the principle behind nuclear power plants, nuclear weapons, and the sun. That radioactive decay happens at a fixed rate. So we can look at the ratio of different carbon isotopes in an object and use that to get an idea of how long it has been dead. Therefore, that gives a date as to when it was used. Now, absolute dating allows us to do relative dating. Imagine you have a layer of soil, and in that layer you have a cow bone and a piece of pottery. You can carbon date the cow bone because it once was alive, but not the pottery because that is made of inert rock. But because they're next to each other in the soil, in that same layer, we can assume they were buried nearly at the same time, so they are roughly the same age. Therefore, you can say the pottery is of a similar age to the cow bone. It gets cleverer than that. People like to copy each other, which means styles of things like coins, jewellery, and of course pottery go in and out of fashion. So if we know the piece of pottery we found with the cow bone is a certain date, we can assume that pots which look similar to that pot are also the same date. Over time, we get lots of dates for lots of different types of pottery, and some very dedicated people create vast tomes which put all those pieces of pots into chronologies. If we find a piece of pottery but no material that can be absolutely dated, we can compare the pot to those big chronologies and estimate its age, and thus the age of the soil layer in which we are digging. That allows us to date all the other finds in that soil layer. Because pottery is essentially made of clay, it's inert and inorganic. It doesn't rot or react with anything in the soil, really. That means it survives very well. If left undisturbed, it will pretty much survive forever. That means we can find lots of pots, compare them to the chronologies, and get very accurate dates without having to do any proper science at all. Now, how about some news? During the course of this season, a couple of sites or phenomena I've mentioned have been in the news or media. I thought I'd share a couple of those stories with you. First of all, let's return yet again to Gough's Cave in Somerset. In October, Food Insider released a YouTube video about cheddar. Gough's Cave is in Cheddar Gorge, and the village of Cheddar gave its name to the cheese, cheddar cheese. Cheddar cheese was first recorded being made in the village of Cheddar in 1170 CE. There is only one cheesemaker still making cheddar in, well, Cheddar. However, they've recently launched a new product. Well, it's an old product, really. You see, that cheddar cheesemaker who's making cheddar cheese in Cheddar has focused on creating cheddar in the most traditional way possible. That traditional method involves aging the cheese in an environment which is consistently around 15 degrees Celsius, with a humidity of 90 degrees. Conditions which exist in most cellars, yes, but also in most caves. The cheesemaker has released a cave-aged cheese. The cave they chose? Gough's Cave. Secondly, Orkney has been in the news, specifically those seaweed-eating sheep I mentioned. The sheep of Orkney are the only animal to do this naturally, and scientists have been studying what eating seaweed does to their gut. The Economist has reported that the seaweed these sheep eat contains a chemical called asparagopsis. It turns out adding just a tiny amount of asparagopsis to the diet of domestic animals like cows and obviously sheep cuts the methane they fart and burp into the atmosphere by up to 2/3. When it comes to the greenhouse effect, methane is 23 times more powerful than carbon, One cow has the same annual effect on greenhouse gas emissions as a family car. There are 1.5 billion cows in the world, and agriculture is to blame for 18% of annual greenhouse gas emissions. If every cow was fed on a diet that included a bit of seaweed, we could cut our annual methane emissions by 1 billion tons of methane. It turns out seaweed-eating sheep didn't just help start civilization, they might just help save it. Before we close off, I want to talk to you about the podcast itself. First of all, I want to reiterate why this podcast exists. You see, archaeology is a weird subject. In many ways, it's a very small niche. Goodness, it's a very small community. However, it's a small niche with big potential. Who doesn't like castles, pyramids, tombs, mummified bodies, and shipwrecks? There is a massive dormant interest in the past amongst the general public. However, apart from a few of my heroes, Mick Aston and Mortimer Wheeler, to name a couple, archaeologists struggle to ignite that interest and turn it into a passion. If archaeology is to have a purpose, a reason for being, it has to get out of the trenches, out of the scholarly tomes, and into the real world. We have to tell stories that people want to hear. That's why I thought this podcast might be a good idea. Its aim is to put archaeological stories and theories into a format that anyone can follow. Now, I don't know what I'm doing when it comes to taking words I write and putting them into your ears. You might have noticed the occasional technical hitch. However, despite my incompetence, we have a growing core of people who are listening to this podcast. We've had nearly 600 listens to this season so far, which means each episode is getting 70 to 100 people listening in the first month alone. I'm glad to say that this thing of ours hasn't crashed and burned. People are interested and we are growing. Needless to say, I'm very, very grateful you all want to listen to me talk about this weird obsession of mine. Thank you. But what next? Well, I'm going to keep pushing and promoting this podcast any way that I can. In that vein, I'd like to officially announce that we have a website. You might have already seen that I've been updating social media with the new site, but I'd love to hear what you think of it. Go to allbones.co.uk, where you can learn more about where this podcast has come from, and of course, listen to the shows and get in contact with me. We've also got the rest of season one to finish. I'm going to take a small break over Christmas. That's not just so that I can drink mulled wine and eat mince pies, although that's going to play a major part, but it's so I can get my head into some books. We've almost run out of prepared episodes, and I need a bit of time to make sure the second half of season one is even better than the first. Episode 8 will arrive on January the 7th, 2020. That episode will be all about Stonehenge and the arrival of the Bronze Age. We'll spend that episode and 5 or 6 episodes after it talking about what is called late prehistory in Britain. That means the Bronze Age and the Iron Age. So we're going to be talking about chariots, Celts, druids, and human sacrifice. Episode 9 is about the skeleton that inspired this whole podcast, the Amesbury Archer. Once we wrap season 1 in around March or April 2020, I'm going to take a break so I can focus on the small matter of getting married. But I'm hoping not to disappear entirely. Between seasons 1 and 2, I'll hopefully do some interviews with actual archaeologists and other bonus episodes. Speaking of those bonus episodes, we've nearly hit the first goal for my Patreon page. If you can get 3 more patrons signed up, I'll begin releasing bonus episodes, more Q&As, more deep dives into specific topics, and also reviews about archaeology in books, TV, and the news. Some of those bonus episodes and interviews might just be teasers for season 2. I've already decided what we're going to talk about. The first thing to know is that for season 2, we're going to stay in Britain. But we're going to jump forward in time. For the most part, we're going to ignore the Romans. We're going to leap deep into recorded history itself. In season 2, we're going to the Dark Ages. But here's the thing. with archaeology, those dark ages aren't that dark. Instead, archaeology is uncovering a world that the history books have forgotten. We're going to talk about Anglo-Saxons, Vikings, kings, and monks. But the monks of the Dark Ages aren't the monks you imagine sitting quietly in their cold stone cloisters. No, these are monks who make stones float and then sail them. They are monks who have books which swim. They are monks that are drinking upwards of 5 pints a day. The release date of that season 2 hasn't been decided yet, nor has most of the content. I'll keep you in the loop though, especially if you're a patron. So, with a great set of episodes on their way, and with an exciting season 2 on the horizon, I hope you're as excited as I am. Of course, as I started off this part by saying, archaeology is a niche. To keep pushing it out into the world requires a few dedicated souls to make it happen. I'd love for you to help me. Please leave reviews. They help so much by making this podcast easier to find. And if you can, I'd love for you to join me on Patreon. Prices start as little as $1 a month. That's around 50 American cents per episode. Otherwise, subscribe and keep listening. I'm very, very grateful for that. So I'll see you all in the new year. A very Merry Christmas. I'm Andy Earnshaw, and this is Old Bones.